Hey, welcome in, everybody. Jaguars Today, every Monday, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Hope you had a great weekend. Happy June to you. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Mark, we missed you last week.
Holy cow, it's June?
It's June already.
Oh, my gosh, I blinked.
My son turns 10 this month.
10?
I feel old. I remember having an old job, having pictures of him on my office door as a little, like, two-month-old infant.
My wife's birthday is tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
I need to do
honey.
Something there. I need to get on it.
You need to get moving.
I've been out of town for a while.
That will not suffice.
That's not going to work.
As an excuse, I don't think.
No.
I mean, yeah, I don't know your wife at all.
You didn't pick her up anything in Vegas?
That there's a real good joke there, but no.
Anything that she'll be happy to receive. Did you?
No.
You and Gronk and Manziel?
Gronk, or? Manziel, I missed them all. I missed the T.I. and the, was it T.I. and, not 50, it was T.I. and...
Floyd Mayweather.
Floyd Mayweather fight. I missed them all. All right there on the strip.
What was the line, Tony? He acts like he doesn't know what I do for a living?
Yeah, it was something along those lines. Because he challenged him to a fight. It's like he doesn't know what I do for a living.
The best part, though, I don't know if you saw the 50 Cent video in response to it.
I did not.
Oh, you need to get online and see that.
Is that on your Twitter timeline?
It is not, but you can Google it and find it. But 50 Cent responded to the two of them hours later and basically said... yo, Floyd, the uppercut doesn't work when bullets are flying, you know? So
okay.
He gave him a stern warning.
Well, Fitty's going to start
uppercuts mean nothing when bullets
lead,
are flying.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And,
T.I. is going to be throwing lead.
Well, somebody's going to be throwing lead. And
50's warning.
Fitty is warning about the
Mayweather
lead
that,
barrage.
Yeah, that T.I. doesn't fight with his fists.
He fights with his bullets.
There you go.
And what a better way to have plausible deniability than to announce the intention to start.
Well, listen. T.I. has a pretty long rap sheet. It's not like, you know, anybody would be shocked to know that he's got some skeletons in his closet, you know, and maybe some rap sheet there, you know. Maybe not Aaron Hernandez.
I would trust Mr. Vegas on this more than I would trust myself. Back from Destin.
Yeah, week in Destin after Vegas.
Anything interesting of note?
Nothing. Other than the SEC threatened to create Division IV along with the other Big Five. No, I think the small schools have too much to risk to not give in to the Big Five, the small conferences.
They just become Division III, right? I mean, Division III out there it's a cool thing. You get to play college football, but you're not making any kind of money. The programs aren't making money like the big, you know, the lower rung D1 schools make.
You need them. You absolutely need the Big Five conferences. You need those big teams. Listen, think about it. How many of those schools go and play at these places? For now, the paying price is about $1 million, $950,000 last year, for a fellow Division One,
right, to come buy them
to buy out a game.
Team.
I mean that funds your athletic program.
Yeah, pretty
not
much.
Not just your football program, your athletic program.
Right.
When you play four or five of those a year, maybe not that many, two or three of those a year, that's a big part of your funding. And so if the Big Five was to separate, and you know, like Nick Saban suggested. Let's just play each other. Let's play 11 or 12 games against the five conferences. You'll play your eight in conference and then four from the other,
sure.
One from each other conference. Shut all those guys out and all of a sudden, you know, the money dries up for
That'd
them.
That'd be phenomenal. I mean, it really, as a fan, I mean,
well, it would, and then of course the playoff would adjust to the fact that it would be more like the NFL where you could get in with, you know, three or four
if
losses
you
probably.
Had that, I think it would rival the NFL playoffs. I really do. I mean, you know, because you've got such passion. Most of the people who root for the Jaguars have never played for the Jaguars. But, you know, plenty of people who root for Florida have gone to the University of Florida. They have, you know, kind of blood ties to them. So
well, yeah, and imagine Florida's schedule. All of a sudden you got eight conference games, plus you're playing Florida State every year. There's your ACC opponent, then somebody from the Big 12, somebody from the Pac-12, either road or home, and then somebody, what am I missing, Big 10, somebody from the Big 10. So Big 10, Pac-12, Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, throw those in with Florida State, and that's a heck of a schedule that would probably sell out.
Well, we were not in Destin, Tony and I, last week. We were here toiling away at OTAs, and we learned a lot that we're not going to tell you about.
I'm the furthest guy behind in the media corps.
You are. You haven't been out there, and you know, we feel like we're not very behind, but Tony and I usually wrap up the show just in time for 11 on 11 to start, which
stuff
is,
you
know,
talk about.
Information embargo.
That's
and
right.
I get it. You know, they're going to make you make it available so you, as a member of the media, have a better sense of the team and think that can, you know, without directly saying, hey, here are the formations they're running, you'll have a better feel for what they're actually trying to accomplish out there. But it does make it a challenge to report on OTAs when you can't get into specifics. Now, chart away to your heart's content on 7-on-7 drills.
How does Denard Robinson look?
He's been catching the ball well. I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's spilling the beans.
As a receiver?
As a backfield.
Yeah.
Shown good hands, I think, this week. Haven't seen the ball on the ground a whole lot this week, and not going to get into too many specifics of who dropped them. I can think of a few specific ones that happened, but it'll be a mystery. That'll be solved later on. And anything that happened in May ultimately won't have a big impact, I don't think, on what happens in September. As we go into June here, week two, got the rookies back who went out to the premiere last week, so Blake Bortles will be out. You'll see him for the first time with his veteran teammates on the field today.
I indeed will.
Yes.
Looking forward to it.
We will get
into that.
And
Chris Clemens will be there, supposedly.
We hope. 98%, yeah. We're told. I'm betting that it will be an issue if he's not there today. But Gus seemed just shy of positive that today was the actually that he'd be in town, I believe, yesterday. And today would be his debut on the practice field.
Gus is always positive.
Well, he is always positive, okay. But I don't mean positive in terms of demeanor. I think positive in terms of sure of the outcome of this one. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out. Plus, got a couple of interesting stories from around the NFL at large. Stephen Ross, owner of the Miami Dolphins, said over the weekend, I believe Friday actually, that he feels like there will be a team in Los Angeles within the next 5 years, a team that's relocating. I'll tell you why the story actually is kind of a positive one for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then you have Arthur Blank in the Monday Morning Quarterback column of Peter King today saying he thinks one, possibly two franchises permanently located in London and elsewhere, potentially around the globe as well. So we'll get into that a little bit as well. What Mark Long of the Associated Press is looking for to report on in OTAs this week, what he thinks he'll be allowed to share with you, and what angles he'll be taking. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony here with you. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. We'll come back, tell you what the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is. Jackson DeVille, the Cat, Curtis, will join us for the second hour of the show today as well. So a lot to do on this Monday. Glad you're with us as we embark on our first show in June. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony here with you. Gus Bradley joined us at the tail end of Friday's show with Ryan O'Halloran on board. If you want to go back and hear that, if you missed it, you can go to 1010XL.com, click on the On Demand section, and check out all the latest offerings from Jaguars Today and all the shows here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And if you want to download Jaguars Today as a podcast for your mobile device, head to Jaguars.com into their media gallery, and you can do the same thing. Mark Long, OTAs, storylines. Seriously, for you, as an Associated Press writer, how do you approach covering OTAs? Do you look for stories? Because I get the sense, you know, asking or watching how certain patterns of questions are asked, you know, in press conferences, that guys go in and say, hey, today I'm going to write about so-and-so. So they go in and they will ask a series of questions about X player. They'll maybe ask an assistant coach, maybe talk to the player, and they have that preconceived notion that this is a story I would like to write about. Do you do that, or are you more looking to see what develops in front of you and kind of writing it that way?
No, you hit on it. It's the off-season, the OTAs are feature-driven. There's not a lot of news happening
right
on the field. There's not a lot of tracking that you can do, per se, on the of what, you know, whether guys look great, this, that, and the other. Occasionally, if a guy catches your eye, you might think about it down the road. But usually, It's very feature-driven, where you look at how the team has changed from last year to this year, whether it's Mike Brewster, who's now, you know, vying for the starting center spot, whether it's Tyson Alualu, who's, you know, they brought in guys to compete with him at his position. Those kind of stories to me. Offensive line in general. Luke Jokel returning from an injury. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know, I think Brewster's more than vying for that spot. I think he's significantly in the lead for that spot, just based on. And I know you weren't here last week, but I'm sure you keep.
You're not gonna let that go today. That you're ahead.
No,
of
no,
me.
No. I don't.
Hey, you're rubbing it in.
I'm not rubbing it in.
You're way ahead of me on this beat.
You have multiple beats that you cover. Is my point, and I'm just pointing out that you know that these are things that were said in your absence, and. That's all. I'm not trying to burn you in any way, shape, or form. I haven't reached the point where I'm ready to burn
you yet.
Okay,
good, good.
You and I will
we'll get there.
We can flamethrow if you want to choose a date in the near future. Mm-hmm. We can have a show like that. But no, Gus said he's very happy that the team is very happy with the left side of the offensive line right now. He said Jokel, Beatles, and that includes Brewster, and that they think that's pretty safe. He said, you know, Pastor, like, you know, guy in the lead and the other guard spot, he won't even, you know, that's way off in the future as to how that whole thing's going to play out. But he really did add Brewster to that mix. Where
so you can't even tell me who's lining up at the right guard position.
I could.
What about in seven? How about in seven on seven?
I saw Linder. I saw some Jacques McClendon. I saw a number of guys get reps.
Seven on seven. Okay.
And seven on seven. Yeah. Do they? Even,
by the way, no.
No, they don't have a guard out there in seven on seven. So yeah, you get the point.
I just got you in trouble.
I made that up entirely. It's all right. But you can imagine who the usual suspects are
in that case.
But
yeah.
No, so in all seriousness, no, the Brewster, I think that Gus has kind of almost put him into the, you know, I don't know, we all kind of penciled him in at center, but I think he's done that as well. I think he's really happy with
he's light inked himself into the
starting
lineup.
Yeah, a little bit of light ink as far as that goes. So what are you approaching for your features this week? What's on your
mind? Today I'm going to write Chris Clemons. Obviously he's the story today. If he's there, if he's not there, either way, I think he's the story. And then, you know, just as we touched on, I think Brewster, Jokel, to me, Linder is a great story because I said this before with you on air. Of all of the draft picks, he's the one right now you do pencil in as a starter. You can't pencil in Lee and Robinson. I think, you know, there's a chance there that one of them or maybe both of them could end up starting on week one, but certainly with Shorts and Ace Sanders, there's no guarantee there. And then of all, you know, when you look around all the draft picks, I would say, you know, Linder's the one guy who's probably penciled in as a starting right guard.
Certainly to us, it would be a surprise. But don't you think you almost, I mean, what percentage would you put that one of those rookie wide receivers at minimum? In three wide receiver sets, you might have both of them on the field. But I would be shocked, to be honest with you, if one of them didn't emerge to play opposite Cecil Shorts in a two wide receiver set.
I would too. But, you know, Ace Sanders had some productivity last year. You know, he's at year two. He might be a little ahead of him. Who knows? You know, until you see him out there in pads in August, you really won't have a real good idea. Because, again, you know, we'll see how these two emerge. But, you know, you would hope that one of them, if not both of them, as you were saying about a three wide receiver set, you would hope that both of them get into the mix as second and third round picks.
Both as second round picks and obviously bringing that talent to the table. And we talked with Tony and I talked with Ace last week, and I think the feeling is from him as well that they probably used him much more than they wanted to ever set out to do. Now, he did a nice job, but he certainly got pressed into duty above and beyond because of the suspension to Blackman, injuries to Cecil Shorts, and just overall lack of depth in the wide receiver core. So,
and would it stun you that if you know when push comes to shove, three, four games into the season, that Ace Sanders is their number four receiver? He's a punt returner, and he's their number four guy.
Perfect scenario.
Who works into the slot here and there at times behind Cecil.
Yeah, I think that would be the perfect scenario for this football team. Who do you think, you know, we talk about the depth on the defensive front eight, we'll call it, the front four, but the two deep there, and you're going to do a story on Chris Clemons. Who do you think maybe we're not talking about that is kind of in a battle for a roster spot? Is it Andre Branch? I mean, could one of those veterans like Jason Babin be in that position? Or, you know, the Jags have such youth there that they're more likely to keep both Clemens and Babin this year, who they, you know.
I think Clemens, you know, given what they paid him and given his productivity and his, he's a little
when
bit
when
young.
You go out and, and take another guy in free agency from another team, the great likelihood, and yes, we've seen flops, Mohamed Massaquah and guys like that. Chris Clemens is a lot more accomplished than
Absolutely. And he wasn't, it's not like he was cut for performance-based reasons. He was cut because of what they had to do salary cap.
Sure, they got big contracts coming.
Yeah, they paid Richard Sherman, I mean, a boatload of money.
They're going to pay Russell
Wilson
coming up.
They've got to pay Russell Wilson coming up.
They paid Michael Bennett in free agency.
So you've got to make some when you're that good and you've won a Super Bowl and you've been in the playoffs now, is it 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row, whatever it is, you got to start making some tough decisions. So you got to, you know, cut guys, and obviously Clemens' age is working against him. But my guess would be Babin is the guy on the bubble here. You got to look at what they paid too. I mean, they paid Clemens considerably more than they're paying Babin. Babin came back, took a pay cut, came back, a little more than veteran minimum here. So, you know, Babin's the guy to me. I think he's got to prove himself in camp for sure. And probably the other guy on, you know, we don't mention him very often, but I would say Chris Przezinski. I mean, and even Josh Evans for that regard. I think when you look at this team, Winston Guy has maybe even penciled himself in as the starting safety opposite Jonathan Cyprian. So all of a sudden, you know, and they like the guy they picked up in undrafted guy.
Jerome Jr.
Yeah, they said there's another
Craig
one too.
Craig Loesten.
Loesten's the guy I'm thinking of. Craig Loesten. Jerome Jr. made a lot of plays during the rookie camp, but again, it was the rookie camp. But they like Loesten a lot already. So, you know, I would think that when you look at Przezinski and Josh Evans, they got their work cut out. In fact, I have, if you put me on the spot and said who's the first draft pick that gets cut by this regime, they have not cut a draft pick after year one, going into year two. I would right now. I would pencil in Josh Evans right
now. Be the
biggest
target.
Yeah, and I know he was kind of Tony Khan's guy. He was a big time playmaker at Florida. Made a lot of plays on the back end, but he just, you know, he hasn't quite transitioned.
And he's hurt right now too.
Had the
surgery to remove the bone spurs. So at the very least, even if you're going to come back and you're going to be 100% healthy for training camp, a guy like Winston Guy, who has been singled out by Gus, he said the thing that he likes about him is he's got, you're basically playing two strong safeties, wants to shore up the run defense on this team, but he's got enough quickness and side-to-side movement to cover the field, and they think doing a good enough job. Physically, I mean, just a big guy. He stands out when you see him in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, no question. And, again, he made plays last year when he got on the field. He basically supplanted Josh Evans in the starting lineup late last season. And, he's a guy to keep an eye on. Obviously, they like him. And so that whenever they've kind of singled out a guy as the guy they like at that position, everybody behind him is kind of on alert that they got to raise their game. And that includes Przezinski and Evans and, you know, everybody else.
Yeah, and I think a big part of this is we don't know what the numbers will end up being and how many they'll keep in different position groups, right? I mean,
you don't keep a lot more than four safety. Oh, right,
obviously.
Right.
But just across the defense and how that number, because there's always a couple of spots that you could give an extra one to this group.
Special teams plays a factor.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think
those guys have a chance to make cornerbacks, safeties, linebackers always have a chance to make the team on special teams, where not so much any of the other positions.
And Gus has been beating that drum heavily all week about these guys really need to add value to the further chance to make the roster. He also went through a list of guys. I think Ryan O'Halloran brought up Ricky Stanzi the other day because he got a lot more reps with Blake Bortles out in L.A. for the rookie premier deal. And so Gus said, you know, that he really surprised him when he came in, that how prepared he was, how good he looked, how much he knew the playbook and all this. And but then he went on to mention guys that studied. He said, hey, I hate to say the same names over and over, but Chad Henne's looked good to me. Cecil Shorts has looked good to me. But he also mentioned Andre Branch and Jonathan Cyprian specifically. And I don't think most of those guys are a surprise, but the more you hear about Branch doing well, and again, I'll trust he knows what to look for in a non-contact drill a lot more than I know what to look for in that circumstance. Is it oversimplification to say that Jason Babin gets brought in almost as insurance to see if that fire remains lit under Andre Branch.
Sure, and from a Chris Clemens standpoint, you know, you just don't know. You know, you don't know what you're getting, you know, but Gus hasn't seen Chris Clemens in person in a year. Now he hasn't seen him in a couple, an extra week. So you never know from year to year how guys are going to respond. So you got to have competition. You got to have insurance policies at every position. And if you don't, you're in a world of trouble. And, so that's what they've done that on the defensive line, probably more so than we've seen in a number of years here in terms of having depth at every position across the board, options. And, you know, they got it. And so, you know, we'll see how it pans out. I mean, I would be a little surprised if we're not sitting there on opening day and it's not Chris Clemens and Andre Branch at the right defensive end and Red Bryant at the left defensive end with, you know, probably Tyson Alualu backing him up or the draft pick. Chris Smith was more of a Leo, though.
Yeah.
So, probably, you know, so Tyson, I feel like I'm missing somebody on that left spot.
Were you here for the death of the Sam, by the way? So, you know, Sam's dead, and Otto is replaced.
I gave you
That's
Otto.
That's true. You did give
okay?
us Otto. But I wasn't
yes.
sure you were here for the official death. I guess he died his death right right before you left for Destin, is the way it went.
The death of Sam? Sam.
Sam's dead, and Otto has replaced him. You saw Blake
Long
Bortles.
Live Otto.
You saw Blake Bortles at the rookie minicamp.
I did.
What do you want to see out of Blake Bortles over the 3 days of practice this week?
Well, you know what? Steady improvement. I think that's all you can ask for at this point. I don't need to see, you know, flashiness here and there. I'd much rather see a guy who has command of the offense and, you know, and ball security. I mean, that's probably more than anything. You don't want to see a guy thrown into traffic, getting balls batted, tipped up, picked off, whatever, batted down at the line of scrimmage. If you go back to the rookie camp, they had a lot of botched snaps, too. And it wasn't Blake Bortles' fault, but it was some poor center play, some poor snaps. And I'd like to see all that smooth out with Brewster in there, Brewster and Bortles, or whoever the backup is. And Bortles, you can't tell me who the backup is. I'll find out today. I have my guess.
He looked very good in 7-on-7s. I'll tell you that.
He's standing on the sideline during 7-on-7s. Yeah, I mean, you know, just and some you know, like I said, consistency over the 3 day stretch and maybe steady improvement.
All right, let's take a quick timeout. OTAs will get underway in a little under an hour right now as Mike Dempsey, Mark Long here with you. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday continues. We'll take a look at what Stephen Ross and Arthur Blank had to say about the future of the National Football League in both Los Angeles and London and why. At least the way it's being reported, maybe a positive for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Get into that coming up next, right here on Jaguars Today, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Jaguars Today on the home of the Jags, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Wild West Guns and Gold brings you Jaguars Today every Monday. They are North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, whether it's revolvers, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, you name it, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. That is their guarantee to you. You can even trade your gold for guns at guns4jax.com. That's the launching point, guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com, or head by their location on Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. Our Monday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. I told you I would mention, and I forgot to do it, the Tom Bush Family Dealership Fan Feedback Spotlight Question of the Day with Jackson DeVille coming in today, as a matter of fact, at the top of the hour, to look at his time here in Jacksonville. That is, don't worry, he didn't die. He's continuing on in his capacity. But
no, he is not dead.
He is not dead. He's doing quite well.
He is alive and kicking.
He is really, in some ways, Mark Long's personal hero. I think Mark may have. Did you grow up at one point wanting to be a mascot? Was that how that?
Well, no. I only wanted to be a mascot. Recently,
you found out it's a pretty good life. That a
it's
mascot.
Not a bad gig.
No,
you get
right.
to go to London.
This is true.
You get a lot of appearances. You
now you went to
you
London.
You meet a lot
though,
of cool people.
Last year, right?
I did. I went to 2012 for the Olympics.
Okay.
I did not go last year for football.
Oh, you didn't go for the
no,
game.
I think I had a Gators game that week. So
now we know your priorities.
Yeah, oh yeah,
quite.
We have people in London. They handled the Jags.
Yeah,
that
people
week
in Gainesville. I
got.
Of course, that's you.
That is me.
You are the people.
I'm also our people in Destin.
Yes.
Apparently. and Daytona.
And that's fine. Yeah. So you get to go all these exotic
locales. Yeah, I don't know if they're quite as exotic as Jacksonville gets to go.
Yeah?
But, I mean, he goes.
Good for him.
Yeah. I think he was around for the swimsuit calendar shoot.
Yeah, is
in,
that right?
A couple years in London. I think didn't they shoot in London last year? Yeah,
I'm looking at June.
Right, we've turned the page.
That's certainly not Jacksonville.
That is
not Jacksonville. No,
they used or to Jacksonville. Have one of those old British telephone booths on by that British pub on US 1, kind of between. You know the one I'm talking about?
I do.
Between St. Helens. That's not it. I don't think.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's.
Did the cat make the calendar? In any way, shape, or form?
I don't think so.
That's good editing.
Fortunato gives a big fat no on that one.
Joe would know, by the way.
He may be camouflaging that tree, though, behind her. He could be prowling.
He could.
The question today, by the way,
he could be bungeeing from the top.
Right, he could be just out of frame.
Absolutely,
He's kind of snapping back.
Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, the original.
Exactly, that was very good. Good flick. But the question today is just share with us your favorite Jacksonville memory, moment, or routine, or whatever thing he does. The first thing that jumped to mind for you, as I think for a lot of members of the media, was the day he caught on fire, which is tremendous.
Yeah, that was absolutely tremendous.
I love to see, because...
That was a horrible season. I think that might have been the 08 season, right?
I think
it might have been the 08 season.
Sounds about right.
And I remember, because I ended up writing, but I can look it up and find it. I remember writing about the fact that it was very... It was very fitting for where they were at the season.
Dumpster fire.
Yeah, I mean, just dumpster fire on a train wreck.
Right.
Dumpster fire on a train wreck. Yeah, that's it.
And the more time I spend in the stadium now, you know, we're down here on a daily basis, he'll pop up at the weirdest times riding that little mini motorcycle of his,
He's got the
Segway.
Thank you, Joe.
Yes.
Segway. He's got his Segway.
Yes.
We used to have the motorcycle, and he'd ride the motorcycles through the hall, all over the practice field.
He does do a lot of stuff with the Segway now.
So now, yeah, I mean, we've gotten environmentally, we went green apparently at some point.
Well, that's fine. He was up in the lunchroom the other day.
The Honda 50 to the Segway.
Just appears in full uniform, in full gear.
You never know where he's going to drop in from.
You don't. Wouldn't be surprised if we see an appearance today.
You know, he's got to be licking his chops with the new scoreboards, right?
You would think.
Massive new scoreboards, new unique places for him to jump from.
Is there the ability to bungee jump and dip your hand in the pool?
You know what? They're doing a hard hat tour this week. Are you going? Hard hat tours.
What is the hard hat tour? See, only AP guys get invited.
Tuesday and Wednesday, hard hat tours.
What time?
For the media. Well, kind of like right in the middle of our show.
Right. Well, so, I'm glad you refer to it as our show.
Well,
you
know,
I'm
all in.
Take a little ownership. I like this.
And so hard hat tours, Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe, are the two options. And that would be a very good question for the hard hat tour.
All right.
Are they reinforcing those scoreboards so that Jacksonville?
I don't think the scoreboards will have an issue. I just I wonder,
if he can dip his hand in the pool.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Bungee.
Bungee
kind
into
of little Bugs Bunny dive off of the top thing.
I know one thing. He would try it.
He's I mean, you got to have a certain
crazy cat.
Certain, lack of sanity that accompanies the job, I think, if you're going to do it well, right?
Well, there are perks to doing it well.
Apparently so. And maybe we'll explore those with Jackson DeVille coming up at the top of the hour. What is his favorite? What do you think his favorite perk? What do you think he might say? Gets recognized everywhere. Is that it? Something better.
I
you
would
think
hope
there might
it's something
be something better.
Better? I'm guessing. Yeah.
All right, Mark Long will put you on it with the AP. He'll get to the bottom of the story.
I'm not going to be here for Jackson.
General, you're around all the time,
man. Yeah, sure.
Now that you got to make up for the week you were gone. You got to do double time on some of these stories. All right, let's get to a couple of the comments of some of these owners. Stephen Ross on Friday. Saying that he thinks he'll be a team in Los Angeles rather quickly. This comes kind of on the heels of, was it the mayor of L.A. Just within the last couple of weeks basically saying, look, I've basically gotten to the point where I've given up, that I don't think it's going to happen. I don't, I think, and there's been a debate for a long time that Los Angeles has been used as a carrot to dangle in front of teams to improve their stadium situations. And once that is gone, once that's filled up, you almost lose the ability to leverage teams at, with the threat of we're going to steal your franchise. But I thought the cool thing about the story, there is such a cool thing about Los Angeles maybe poaching a franchise or two, is that the Jags no longer are a default team that gets even mentioned in these stories anymore, which I think is fantastic. You know, maybe the cynical will say, yeah, because they're earmarking them for London. But you know what I mean? But you see San Diego, you see Oakland, you see
St. Louis,
right. And
Buffalo,
Buffalo as a potential, as there was a story out yesterday that they've got ownership groups that would buy Buffalo for a lot of money if they knew they could move the team, if they're going to be allowed to move the team.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be a pretty strong caveat for anybody who wants to buy Buffalo, especially if they want to pay upwards of over $1 billion.
Well, that's the question, right? You can, are you going to, as the Bills, are you going to try to maximize the most money you can make, which clearly you're going to sell then to a group that's going to look, they have an escape clause after like 6 years in their lease, and then the lease ends entirely in 9 seasons. So within a decade, you would have the ability to move the franchise free and clear without any legal entanglements from Buffalo. But, you know, are you going to lose money? You know, if the team knows you're on the way out, if the fan base knows you're on the way out, can you be viable in for the next 6 to 9 years in Buffalo?
That's well, there's enough probably football fans and hardcore fans who would still show up knowing the team was, you know, was moving inevitably, I think.
And they wouldn't play it so blatantly.
No, they'd
say, hey, you know what, you're in the trial period. Show us why you deserve the team.
Absolutely. And then, you know, then of course they would have 6 or 9 years of evidence to say this is why the team needs to move. And then they'd probably move them maybe not quite like the Colts moved in terms of overnight with the trucks. But, you know, they could do it in an off season. You know, they certainly could. Or, you know, give them that one final year where everybody knows they're moving, but the fans would probably still show up out of respect for, you know, a pretty storied franchise.
You're right, the history of the franchise and
all that. If you told them, this is your final year in Buffalo.
Regardless
you know.
Of that, I mean, it seemed like we'd reached a point where the L.A. talk had died down quite a bit. And there are issues with playing in Los Angeles. There's said to be, Roski, I think, is the Ed Roski.
Right.
As the guy who has the quote-unquote shovel-ready project ready to go. But I think that's contingent on him owning a team and bringing it there. And then he's got a project that's ready to go that's cleared all the legal hurdles. And that's part of the issue. They don't really have a place to play right now in Los Angeles. But if you're taking a situation where you put the Buffalo Bills up for bid to the highest bidder and you've got 6 years to get ready for that, you've got plenty of time to rectify that end of the situation.
If the guy had any real moxie, he'd go ahead and build it first.
Build the project now,
and then
I think that's the thing, and then
force the NFL's hand a little bit.
Can they pay for it though?
Well,
will you be able to recoup that money if you don't own the team there? And that's the feeling: if you don't own, you've got to own the stadium, own the team. You've got to be able to use that stadium like Jerry Jones does, you know, to attract other kind of events.
Well, I've said it before. I said it to you: is that I really think the ideal scenario would be LA having two teams, kind of like basketball, kind of like the Jets and Giants do in New York, where you build this.
You think they might have tried that at some point in their history.
Where you build a super stadium that's, you know, got all the bells and whistles nowadays, and you try to bring in two franchises and go, you know, week to week. But, you know, maybe not. Maybe that market can't support it. I don't know. But,
It hasn't,
no.
And it certainly hasn't slowed the NFL from making money.
But it was a bad facility and bad football.
Yeah, no guarantee that the football is going to be any good. You know, the facility, you would imagine if they build a new one, is going to be maybe state-of-the-art, the best in the league. Then you got Arthur Blank coming out in the Peter King Monday Morning Quarterback column today and saying that he thinks one, possibly two teams in London. He said London's a big city. He didn't put the timetable on it, but he thinks a further expansion of the amount of games that are going to be played there is in the near future. The games to this point are selling out practically immediately, and he thinks it's sounded like inevitable. Do you agree with that standpoint?
I still wonder whether the logistics will work. I think they want to, and I think you know, it's viable. There's no question it's viable, a viable spot for an NFL franchise, and the NFL wants to be there, and those two parts make sense. I still wonder logistically, how do you play? How does that team play in London and it be a neutral field for that team and for the teams traveling over there? You know, are you going to, you know, it's not like they can have, everybody can have a bye week coming out of playing over in London. You just can't, it doesn't work that way. And do you play four games over there to start the season and then four games in the United States? I mean, you just, you know, there are no Concords out there where you're getting back and forth in 2 or 3 hours anymore. I mean, all the Concords are gone. So, you know, logistically, it's still a pretty long flight, longer than East Coast to West Coast. And it takes a toll on your body. And I think when you're asking a team over there to make that trip, you know, 8 times a year would be excessive. And even if you said, okay, we're going to come over to the United States.
You're going
to
pair up your road games,
right? Yeah, we're going to pair up your road. Then you're talking about guys being away from home and on the road for 2 weeks, and that's a competitive disadvantage. These guys will tell you the same thing. They did it last year for 1 week when they went Oakland and then Seattle, and yeah, they played Seattle. That was the competitive disadvantage in and of itself. But you know, you're on the road for a week, and that takes its toll.
Right. Well, and the feeling was that was less of a disadvantage than flying out, setting up, doing the whole thing, flying back out.
Right.
And, you know, time will tell if they take that approach in the future.
And as we've said before, you know, players aren't going to want to play in London because of that.
A lot of them, the stars would like to play in L.A. I think a lot of people, when they realize how bad the tax situation in the state of California is.
30% tax.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, 30% tax in London, at
right.
least. So, you know, does the NFL offset? They don't offset it in the United States. They don't offset playing in New York or playing in LA versus playing in Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami, Tennessee, some of the places that don't have state income tax. So what makes you think that they're going to offset it
right.
for London?
Right. You go back to the late 80s, early 90s when the NBA was, you know, coming out of the tail end of the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson era and really going full bore into the Michael Jordan era. And it was in a really good place. And at that time, there was a lot of talk about ultimately having a European division of the NBA. And in fact, when Michael Jordan's Bulls were riding high and the popularity of the league was probably at an all-time high in the 90s, David Stern declared that by 2000 they would have a team in Mexico City.
Right.
So all these best-laid plans and all these definitive statements by Arthur Blank and Stephen Ross don't mean anything in the end because there's a lot of hurdles. Doesn't mean they can't come true, but they're far from gospel.
And what means a lot more to me anyway is when Oakland Raiders owner now, Mark Davis, is it Al's son?
Al's son. You've seen the haircut, right?
Yeah. When Mark Davis comes out, you know, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and says, I have put thought into potentially moving to L.A. So, you know, for him, when he's thinking about it, and he's the owner of that franchise, that's way more important than if Stephen Ross says it's going to happen.
No
or
doubt.
Arthur Blank.
I just think, too, going back to the original point of, you know, the coverage of the way the story is portrayed, to no longer have the Jags immediately thrown in there, I think is a testament to the slowly but surely growing perception that they're building a level of excitement here in Jacksonville. And they've probably been behind that story for a while, you know, behind as in not catching up to where it's been. But slowly, I think it's starting to creep out there in the national consciousness.
Well, and I think people realize that, you know, Shad Khan has not wavered. I mean, he is absolutely committed to this city. He's dumped millions and millions of his own money into the franchise, into the city here. You don't do that if you're planning to pull the rug out from under people's feet. You just don't. And I know the critics will say, or the flip side of that is, you know, if he moved a team, he would automatically make all that back times two in terms of equity immediately. And I get that, but I just don't think you put blood, sweat, and tears and your cash into a franchise if your ultimate goal is to move it.
He is Mark Long with the Associated Press. You're going to stick around and say hi to your hero, your mentor?
I am in the
mascot business. The cat will join us next. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long. Fat Tony will be joined by Jackson DeVille. All right, this date in football history brought to you today by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. On this date in football history, former New York Giant coach Bill Parcells underwent open heart surgery back in 1992. Obviously, he survived that one. Garo Yepremian born in 1944. Good for one of the best blooper highlights in Super Bowl history when he picked up the ball after, a botched snap in the Super Bowl after the 72 season.
Yeah.
Tried to throw a pass, ended up getting picked off, returned for a touchdown by the Redskins, the only points Washington would
score
in that
game. What a pass
it was. Oh, it's one of the, arguably the worst pass in NFL history, but it's a little bit better when you win the football game. You're good to go in that regard. So, Gary Yeprumi, what does that make him? 70.
Wow.
Today, I think. Is that right? 60? I might be aging him prematurely.
Worst move in Leon Lett?
I mean, it wasn't a pass, but it's those are on the certainly the top five all time, you would think.
Botched plays.
Yeah, botched plays. Yeah. Leon's got a couple of them. You know, he got run down by Don Beebe, right, and then he's got the sliding into the blocked field goal cost him the game.
Right, against the Dolphins.
The other one actually probably made him money because he has, every year at the Super Bowl, he and Don Beebe are there signing books, doing all kinds of stuff. They're linked forever, and they won in a blowout. So.
Right.
Wasn't the biggest deal in the world. Best Fence Company, their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product fencing at a competitive price. They'll provide you unsurpassed customer service. You're going to feel protected. You'll breathe easier knowing the Best Fence Company installed your new fence. You can get a free professional estimate by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. The cat is here. Jacksonville. Hello, cat. How are you?
Heyo. What's happening?
What's up? Mark's a big fan of your work.
Yeah. Mark and I have been friends for a long time, and I thought he held to a journalistic standard with off the record conversations.
I'm talking about his on the field work.
His antics.
His antics. The guy is fearless. I've never seen a stunt he would turn down. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know what the rest of you guys are talking about.
Bungee jumping.
Absolutely.
Rappelling.
Yes.
Catching himself on fire for the amusement of the fans.
Well, it wasn't intentional. I don't know.
Yeah, that one. Somebody gave me credit for not breaking character when I caught on fire, and I tweeted back. Well, I actually didn't know I was on fire.
And how would you know to break character or not, other than, I guess, take the head off?
No,
right?
It was a brief thing there. It was fireworks during player intro, Kurt Weisenball's fault.
Was it 08? Do I have the right year?
It was Fred Taylor's last year. So it was Fred Taylor's last game running out at home. He ran out with Mojo together.
That would be 08.
Yeah, so they ran out together. I stood between them. The pyro went up, and it was super windy. Blew the pyro sideways, and one of those little embers stuck right into the suit. And apparently, synthetic nylon is flammable. Synthetic fur is very flammable. So that ends, and we go straight into Anthem, and all of a sudden I start smelling, you know, more smoke than I've smelled before, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. Starts building up more and more. I look over at the pyro box, and I'm like, oh, somebody's got a fire to put out. There's something going on. Turn like this, turn towards the field, Anthem's starting or whatever, and one of the security guards come running over with this panic look on his face, and I'm like, what's the problem? He's like, Curtis, you're on fire! And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, that's what the smoke is. So I put my head down thinking, oh, just pat it
pat
out.
It
just
out,
a
right.
little, you know, burning ember. I put my head down, tilt down like this, and at that time, he pats like this, and you hear that sound. You ever been around a campfire?
Sure.
When you drop something, when you drop something in real flammable, and you hear that,
yep.
That. So I hear that noise, and then smoke just pours in where I can't even see and breathe. And then I was like, oh, bleep.
Darn.
And I turn. I see two cops coming at me to probably tackle me. And I'm like, no, I know how to get this thing off. Let me get out of here. So I bolt into the tunnel, crack the two chin straps, and throw the head on the ground. And it just goes on the ground. So we put it out, water, CO2, all that stuff. And then I'm sitting there, and the game's getting ready to start. And like Mark said, it wasn't one of our better seasons so far. So I knew, I was like, if I go back out with the whole half of my head charred, like, you know, Two-Face and Batman or something, this is not, and somebody AP captures a picture of this, the headline's going to be Jaguars get torched.
Jags season goes up in flames, all this stuff.
So I'm like, well, let me just wrap it. Nobody probably saw this. Everybody's watching the anthem. So I wrap it with this white, you know, mesh as a do-rag. And I'm like, cool, I got away with it, nothing, you know, no big deal. I walk out, and sections like 104, 105, 106, and 107, all standing ovation, come to their feet. I'm like, All right, not going to be able to hide this one.
No, no, no. We all saw it. It was fantastic. I do appreciate the dedication to make it to the tunnel, though, before the helmet came
off. Had to get out of there. Can't rip that off on the field.
See, I hesitate to even call you Curtis sometimes because all the little kids out there that are just think there's this giant cat running around in this suit that, I mean, was there a point early on when you were the mascot for the first couple of years that you really didn't want to have your secret identity, for lack of a better term, you know, known publicly?
Yeah, straight out of college, Virginia Tech, came here and 21, and you're taught, you know, when you go through all that training, you're taught never, and especially in college, you never want to tell who the mascot is, because the character is going to be there for 100, you know, 50 years, 10 years, you don't want to, and it's the character is who it is. So I wanted to establish the character the first, you know, 6-8 years, and it was very like, don't call me Curtis, I won't answer to Curtis, don't tell anybody what I do. But you guys know this town. I've lived here. This is 18 years. I'm going on my 19th season. You know, I do a lot of charity events, live auctions, MC stuff over the years. And it's just, you know, more interviews here and there. And it's a small town. So it kind of, after a while, just became, you know, where I couldn't really, you know, keep it, you know,
right,
secret anymore.
They're not separate. The two are the same person.
Yeah, I've inhaled enough Febreze over the 19 years that I. It mixes often.
I would imagine, though, you're very careful not being seen with the uniform with the helmet on, or
right,
the head on.
Never. There's it's either, you know, pictures, it's either full out or full
none.
In.
Right.
There's no halfway pictures. That's the only thing I still get really upset about. If I'm in an area and I pop the head off and somebody goes to snap a picture, I ask them to delete it, because there's just two different things, so.
Yeah. Mark's getting ready to go out to OTAs. What do you think? Give me tail of the tape here. Does he have the requisite skills to be an NFL or a professional mascot? Does he have enough game?
I think he has the desire.
Listen, I can ride just about anything on two wheels or four wheels, so that gets me started.
That does get you started.
Yeah.
You know, it's like players. You know, the guy who has the heart, the guy the desire that wants to play and wants to
want
be
it.
You can work
want
with
it.
That.
I'm Rudy.
Yeah, he's
you can put him on a mini motorbike or whatever.
Yeah, he's heard enough about the life that he has the desire and heart to try and make it.
Comment, Mark.
I heard you have thoughts? Are you at a bachelor pad?
I live in a place with three friends.
Former player place?
Yeah, actually one of our players did rent it.
Before
me, and it's a nice little place.
Penthouse?
It's a little place to lay your head on.
Is it a penthouse?
It is. It is.
He's got the pad, man, in Jacksonville.
You're so jealous.
I tell you, it's not just what you think. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to want to be the cat.
You're talking to me, or you're talking
to the audience? I'm talking to everyone.
Because I know what
I'm talking to everyone.
At this point. All
right. I'm going out to OTA. Thanks, Mark. You guys are on your own.
It's good, wholesome family fun all
appreciate
the way around. There he goes. Mark Long of the Associated Press. We'll talk to you later. Heading out to OTAs. We'll spend the rest of the show here with the cat, Curtis Dvorak,
yeah, man.
The full identity revealed there, and get into some of your favorite moments over the years. You've been all around the country and a little bit around the world representing the Jacksonville Jaguar organization, so we'll get into some of the stories that are at least airable here on Jaguars today. When we do that, coming up next, it is brought to you every Monday by Wild West Guns and Gold. Jaguars today, Jackson DeVille in. Mark Long takes his leave. We'll continue along live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we got the big cat in the studio today for the first time. So there's your this date in football history. Jackson DeVille makes and not in full uniform, Tony. Nonetheless,
no, not today.
I assume you'll be out there for the open day of OTAs when the fans will be out there on Thursday.
I'll be at the next one.
Previously scheduled engagement.
Yeah, previously scheduled engagement. Gus didn't check with me. I'm actually headed to West Palm Wednesday night for a tournament, a 4-day tournament with 8 other golfers, which could also be called a guys trip. So
is that typically the routine around the NFL? The coach checks with the mascot to see what's good days for OTAs.
Usually,
you open to the public.
Usually, to see when I can make it out there.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Just you, or is that like a mascot thing around the NFL?
It's kind of something Gus and Dave have done since they got here. You know, they kind of been running a lot of stuff by me. So it's good. It was we kept that we kept the Blake Bortles thing real quiet.
Nicely done. So it was you, it was Dave, then you decided to tell Gus the day before, and Shad Khan got clued in.
Yeah, we said, what do you think about this, Gus?
Keep it within the four. That's a good way to go.
I like to call us the Four Horsemen.
I think most people look at the Mount Rushmore.
We're the Mount Rushmore
of the current organization. in all seriousness, how has this organization changed for you? Just like where the mood of it is right now, compared to there have been some great times in this franchise's history. There have been some lean times as well.
Yeah, you know, it's since obviously my time, you know, here going back to '96, Wayne and Dolores. The way I always tell people, I absolutely love them. I look at them kind of as, you know, I have no grandparents left, but they were kind of like my grandparents. Their doors were always open. They were always here. It was a very awesome environment to be in as far as family. But as far when Shad took over, and Mark and their vision and everything, it's become very it's a great vision that they're able to translate to the staff and tell them this is what we're looking at. And this is what we need to do to get there. And everybody, when we have the monthly team meetings and stuff, I haven't seen, in my, 18 seasons, I've never seen the energy. You know, last year you kind of knew it was coming, but like you guys have said repeatedly, you knew you just didn't have all the pieces in place. And now you start to see this offseason, you start to see pieces and players, coming in and being put in place that you're like, okay, same thing the players kind of say about Gus. He's the same he was last year, and he had this vision. He's told you what he wants to do, and now the players are starting to see, okay, I get it. I get what he's getting at. And the same thing with Mark and Shad and them. You know, the staff is kind of like, okay, we see, the boards are going up, the pools are going in, the sideline seats, all these different initiatives. Carrie Underwood's coming to, do a live concert here for free for season ticket holders. All these things they talked about, saying that we're going to do this and we're going to be the best fan experience of any team. And they're starting to happen, and it's making everybody in the building like really excited about being a part of this.
Yeah, Tony and I have talked about it a lot. Basically, at the state of the Jaguars, when they say this is a possibility, you can almost count on it, right? I mean, a year from now, you see these artist renderings of cabanas and what they're going to do with all the club suites and all this. And I that's kind of in semi-permanent ink in my mind, at least, that's what's coming down the pike for these guys.
Yeah, you look at things that they mentioned that were going to happen, and they're all happening.
All right.
It's exciting.
If you want to get on with the Cat, 641-1010, taking your tweets and your Facebook postings today as well on your favorite Cat antics over the years. Let's just leave it at that. However you want to say, on or off the field.
Twitter's exploding.
Favorite you guys... Cat antics. Oh, I know. And they're killing me because I did spell you with the J-A-C-K today. rightfully so, by the way. They're very protective of the
No doubt they are. And before we let you go, Curtis, I'm going to have to hear you mentioned that you started in 96. We won't go into it right now, but how close we were to never having a 97 and beyond.
Yeah.
With what happened in that game against Atlanta.
Meantime, let's go to our buddy Mark Spencer on the line. He used to be the PA spotter here and a good friend of yours, I know. And hopefully, Mark, you've got some good dirt that you care to share with us here on Curtis.
Well,
what do you got?
Easy, Spence.
If I dish the dirt, he's going to want scopes, and I can't afford to give this guy scopes.
Right on.
Hey, real quick, I spent six seasons as Scott Thomas' spotter at the PA Stadium, and I won't get bore everyone with too many details. A lot of work goes into planning these games, and I did some games under Jen Perkins and Adam Lane, and part of the job as a PA spotter is you're cueing the announcer that everyone hears in the bowl there, but at the same time, in your headphones, you hear the game day producer, you hear the guys in the Jumbotron room, and the people on the field all trying to coordinate, breaks and stuff. And I can't tell you how many freakouts that Curtis would cause of Adam. It was so great. It was awesome. But, the first thing we did when we would get the script for the game, and, I hope people realize, Curtis and the guys, they don't just show up and just, hey, wing it. I mean, this stuff is planned down to the minute. And we would look through the skit and, hey, what's Jackson doing today? And, oh, this is going to be great, and, oh, this is awesome. So these guys put in a lot of work, and also want to give a shout-out to Curtis for it was Jackson DeVille that showed up. It wasn't Curtis. He helped out the San Jose Athletic Association, helped us do some fundraising a couple times, and we're lucky to have him in town, and I'm trying to be really nice to him because maybe I need strokes on the first tee now from me. Such a good player.
Yeah. I hear you. You're actually just trying to butter me up because the three wood should have been in my bag about 3 weeks before the Open qualifier.
He's blaming you, but he'd be in the Open right now.
It was all my fault.
I'd have been in Vero Beach today, and I gotten that three wood a few weeks earlier. No, I'm just kidding.
Mark, just for you, I'll give you a sleeve of golf balls.
There we go.
We'll take it. Anything free we take, Mark. Mark, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for checking in
with
us.
All right, thanks so much.
We'll see you later. There you go. 641-1010 if you want to get on board here. Obviously, somebody asked me on Twitter, ask Curtis what his favorite stunt is. What's his most memorable thing? I never would have thought to ask you that. but since that great idea has presented itself, I think all the fans have things in particular that you do or routines that you do over and over, but is there one or two, other than your head being on fire, is there one that went the way it was supposed to go and it still scared you half to death?
Yeah, you know, as far as that, there's a ton of memorable ones, like, wow, I remember that. And all the stuff that people are putting on Twitter is hilarious. Like, I'm looking at these going, oh my gosh, yeah, like, I can't believe people have pictures of that. But yeah, as far as one that went right, and was, you know, I was almost not here anymore, was I skydived into one game a year for the first, like, 7 or 8 seasons. We had done it day games, no big deal. Well, there was a night game, ESPN, and I was like, I got to jump in. Well, it was when cable cam was first, like, invented. And cable cam's where the wires come from each four corners.
Sure.
They said, oh, well, we got cable cam. And I said, well, is there any way we can do this still? They said, yeah, we've done it with skydivers before, no problem. Basically, what they would do is there's four lines coming in from each corner, and they would detach one of the lines from the camera, pull the camera all the way over to one corner of the field, and then bring that line over. So you'd have basically one entrance into the field through the end zone, and then
without having to mess with the cable,
with that and the wires there, and you'd have to stay. You couldn't get over the stands. You'd have to stay over the field and just do little S turns as you come down. Normally, you can kind of sweep over the stands and everything. Well, we came in. We said, yeah, we can do this, and came around, and it was always tandem because I couldn't jump in with the suit without my buddy Art Schaefer down in Skydive Palatka. Give him a little shout out. So he would be behind me, but because I have over 120 jumps and I was a C-rated license, and so he would have the toggles in my hand where I'm flying as well, but he's kind of directing, like, okay, left, right, left, left, here we go, right. And we kind of were doing little sweep turns. Well, there's a still shot above the field, and we're about 75 feet above the ground, and we did what was called a hook turn almost, where the canopy is 45 degree angle to the field, and we hooked it and swept right in and slid into the landing. I get up, I'm jacked out of my mind because the adrenaline is just so great, the fans are going crazy. He unclips me, and I go running off, and crowd, and everything's great, and I come running back to him, and I'm still excited, and I give him a high five, give him a hug, I'm like, great job, and he's like, sorry man, really sorry man. And I'm like, didn't register. I'm like, I got to go. I got an anthem coming. Okay, great. Well, I watched the tape because I always watch my skits afterwards the next day just to kind of see how it looked and everything. And we land. He unclips me. And you see, as I go running off, he slowly just goes to his knees and grabs his knees and is like, and you see this just panic on his face. And I ask him afterwards, I look, we missed one of the cable cam lines by about just under 10 yards as we hook turned. The reason we did that big hook turn that I didn't know, wow, that was a
right
turn, he yanked it and we swung, is because we were about just less than 10 yards away from the one of the cables coming down. And if you hit that at 75 feet, it's
your chute collapses.
It's not good. The camera would have been broken. So
right. would have been tough on the camera.
ESPN would have been pissed.
You would have been hanging there by the pack, strung up on the wire, probably cut all the wires except one so you could drop down to the ground or something.
And that is a large reason why the zip line stunts came into effect there, because we can really time those out to the second. And they're easier to do on a script, because like Spencer said, everything is timed to the second, on pregame. And you have to hit all these things, because if you miss anthem, network will kill you. If they're on air when you're at anthem, that's terrible, and you'll get fined. And so everything's to the second. So the zip line stunts we can plan down to the second.
Were you a nut in high school? I mean, were you, growing up, were you a daredevil, or did you just decide, man, this seems like something I could do and I can roll with it?
A lot of the crazy stuff that I do, I basically trained and learned here. It was great when I got here. Wayne and the team were awesome. As I came in and I said, hey, I want to try this, and they're like, go get go get trained in it. You know, I want to skydive. Okay, go get trained in it. So part of my work during the week was I'm heading to the drop zone to get my license and learn how to skydive. So a lot of the zip line stunts and all the live stunt work training has all happened here. So, I mean, I was an athlete in high school and played all sports, but, and I guess I was kind of an idiot. I was in the principal's office a lot. So, I mean, that's where that training came
probably
from.
Probably takes a little bit of that, right?
a little bit.
At least a little bit of crazy. I don't think a lot of people around the country see you because a lot of what happens goes on during commercial breaks and stuff like that. So by the corollary, we don't see these other mascots around the country either. Who's good out there? We all think you're fantastic at what you do. Are there other guys that do a lot of daredevil stuff? Because I would think there are a lot of teams in the NFL don't even really have mascots.
There's 26 teams in the league with a mascot.
They do have 26. Okay.
But there's a lot of them that don't give their mascot any stage time, I call it. You know, okay. Where they don't give them skit time. They don't give them an intro. They don't give them a skit during the game.
What do they do? Just kind of hang out by the cheerleaders on the sideline?
They're basically, you know, Toro in Houston gets, you know, sometimes an intro and other times he's just walking the wall, high-fiving fans, signing autographs.
Okay.
Most of the guys are, you know, in the concourse. The Steelers mascot, Steely McBeam, isn't even allowed in the bowl because the fans hate him that much.
And but, it's a terrible name.
It really is a dumb-looking, the whole thing.
Well, the Steelers, they're idiots. And granted, I'm biased because I hate the Steelers, but they called around, their events department called around the league, and I've consulted on, you know, dozens of different mascots in sports and in for companies around town. So they called and said, how do we do this? We want to do a mascot. And we're like, okay, well, you're the Steelers. You're an old brand. Your fans are going to be very resistant to a mascot because they like football. So you need to do something like this. Don't do a human character. Don't do this and that because, you know, it's just you got to do something, blah, blah, blah. We give them all this advice. They come out with Steely McBeam that looked like Bill Cowher. It still does. Looks like Bill Cowher.
Right.
And their fans booed it off the field and hated it, you know, from day one. And we said, you got to give it stage time. You got to let it beat something up. You got to have it, you know, this and that. They didn't listen to any of it. And the thing's a disaster.
But in terms of, like, the daredevil stuff.
Toro in Houston will do some rappels occasionally. T-Rack in Tennessee, he'll do, like, one zip line a year. But it's mostly just step off the board and zip line down. As far as the live stunt work, there's nobody doing the flips and all that stuff that we do.
How long can you keep doing it?
As long as Mark Lamping wants me here.
But I mean, like physically, like, do you reach a point, like, you've been doing this for 18 years, you still feel that it's well within your range? There's nothing that, you're saying, man, I need to dial this back, or are you still ramping
well,
it up?
Well, yeah, I mean, physically, you know, knock on wood, still in good shape, turning 40 in July, and I'm heading to Spain to run with the Bulls.
Nice.
So I still physically feel, well, after that trip, we'll see if I'm physically still okay to do this, but,
Full costume?
No, you know, they don't allow it. They don't allow it.
Awesome.
I would love it. I would absolutely love that, but they would never allow it. They take it really seriously as far as. But I would love to. Obviously, I've always said I'd love to do it until we win a Super Bowl. I want at least one, you know, Super Bowl appearance would be great, just to be on the field for that. But I think, you know, I've kind of looked at 7 more years as a nice little barometer, because it'll be 2020. 7 more seasons. It'll be 2020 and. That'll be my last season, and it'll be 25 seasons in the
NFL.
And
that'll give you, like, 3 or 4 years to get serious about the senior tour.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
get the game in shape to qualify for the senior tour events.
Working on the game right now. I'm at a zero, trying to get to that +1, +2.
That is unbelievable. I mean, to me, I'm just a terrible golfer. You know, I occasionally hit some good shots, and I feel great for 3 minutes. But to see you hit the shots you hit in full costume just really angers me, to be honest with you. I don't know anybody who likes it. We all marvel at it, but I don't know anybody who likes the idea that you can just show up in full costume, generally borrow a club from someone, and stick it on the green at 17 at Sawgrass pretty regularly.
I've been working with the tour for a few years, and that's how we got the halftime promotion last year, working with them on doing something. I've never played a full round in costume just because of heat, and, you know, I need a 4 caddy because I can't follow the ball. But I think I'm about a 10 handicap in costume.
What's the wear and tear? I mean, would the costume hold up to 18 holes?
It would. I'd have to do it. I want to do it, you know, this year. I'm not going to do it in the summer.
You should do it when it's cold.
November, yeah. December, January time frame, I'm going to do it. But I'm trying to set something up with the tour, like the like that U.S. Open thing they do where they take, you know, 4 scratch golfers and see if they can break 100.
On the U.S. Open course.
Well, I want to do it at TPC, like the week after the players.
From the tips.
And we'll get, you know, me in costume and, you know, 3 you know, local, you know, kind of 10 to 15 handicappers and see if they can beat me straight up on the players course and do like a big charity thing, raising money for charity.
I got no shot. I guarantee you right now. I could play from the whites. You could play from the tips, and I got no shot beating you. But I'll take a free round at Sawgrass if
no
you
doubt.
Want to include me in the mix. All right, let's take a timeout. We'll come back. We got Jackson DeVille in studio here with us. Curtis Dvorak, the secret identity, has been known for a while right now. We'll get into some of the appearances he makes around Jacksonville and what he's got coming up this summer as well. And we'll get some of your responses to the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Your favorite antics over the years from the Big Cat. It's coming up next on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, back. We're getting the best of the Cat on the breaks here, Tony. We got to bring some of these stories to Jaguars Today here coming up in a minute. We got Jackson DeVille in studio with us. We'll get to the Tom Bush fan feedback question of the day momentarily. Got some folks on the line that want to talk to you, Cat, however. And we're going to start with a story from, who do we have? Kathy, who wants to tell a story about a school you visited. Kathy, how are you? You're on with Jackson DeVille.
Yes, hi. My husband and I are season ticket holders, and have been for most of the years, and we love everything he does on the field. But my story has to do with when the Cat came to visit my son's elementary school. Back in 98, the Jaguars had a promotion where the elementary school kids could design the tickets, and my son's design was one of the tickets selected. And one of the prizes was that Jackson DeVille came to his elementary school class to have an ice cream party. And my son went to a private school at the time, and his teacher was a very good teacher, but she was very much a disciplinarian. And so Jackson still walks in there, and this is when you weren't saying anything. You were, you know, you were just doing, you know, like a mime or something.
Stick.
And she wanted everybody to give you a silent cheer, which was they just held their hands up in the air silently, and you put your paw up to your ear like you couldn't hear until they finally got to the point where they were screaming at the top of their lungs, and then you were walking across their desks, and they had a beanbag chair in the room, and you had the kids in there, and then you pulled the teacher down there on your lap. And so by the time you ended at that session, the kids were running around the room screaming at the top of their lungs. The teacher was completely discombobulated, and it was really hilarious. All the teachers from down the hall came down there to wonder what in the heck was going on, because no sounds ever came out of this teacher's room. But the kids had a blast, and you were just the most fun. That was the most fun thing that my son did that entire year at that school.
Yeah, I remember that, and I did that often at schools, and it was I would get do that, and that, a lot of that was what I used to do in elementary school. That's why I went to the principal's office. But I got demerits that day. The principal came up and said, "You're getting demerits," and like handed them to me. I'm like, "Oh, okay, thanks." But yeah, I would usually do that at classes, get them going, riled up, and then Eddie Murphy, you know, drop the mic,
right,
and walk off, you
right,
know, and then I would walk out of the room,
leave you to deal with
be
it.
Like, here you go. Here's
well, what do you
back.
Expect? I mean, that's kind of your thing. I love the fact that Kathy, thank you for the call. Kathy is a mom that is a fan of some controlled chaos, you know, thought that was like maybe the greatest thing of the whole school year. You can get away with a lot, I imagine,
yeah,
when you're wearing, you got the anonymity of the costume.
Oh, yeah.
Have you reached a point in public where you're like, oh, maybe I should not have done that?
You know, I guess as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little more mature when it comes to those things. There was a time, like, obviously, when early on, I didn't care at all about what havoc I left at the appearance, what I broke. I mean, there are multiple companies in town that when our sales group, sales guys go do a, you know, hey, we're selling season tickets at lunch.
Good luck.
No, they're literally told, like, they said, he can't do this. He can't do this. Tell him, please don't do this. Because at call centers, like, for one thing, call centers, you know, I call them, you know, the Gopher City, the Cubicle Cities and stuff, and you see all the people, and I go in there, and I would just have so much fun just running through on the phones and scaring people, grabbing stuff on their desk, destroying their desks. Well, they're on the phone with a customer who's upset about their credit card interest or something.
And they can't explain. There's a giant gap.
And there was one chick I walked up to, and I just sat like this. As she's talking, she didn't see me there, and I put the face like right here, and she did that turn like this, and she was like, ah! Screamed right into her microphone talking to the person, and that, you know, that, it was not good. So I'm never allowed back at that one.
All misdemeanor level stuff, though, sounds yeah. like, Tony. Nothing too bad. All right, let's go 641-1010. Daryl, you're next up with Jackson DeVille. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing this morning?
Good. What's up, man?
Yes, I have a question. Has there been any talk about, are you familiar with the Capital One mascot thing they do during the college football season? Has there been talk about, like, maybe having the pro mascots do something like that?
It's a college thing, and it's the NCAA has a sponsorship with Capital One, and that's how they do it. The NFL doesn't have a league-wide sponsorship thing with Capital One. Each of the teams does their own thing. The only thing that came close to that was where they involved all the mascots was the United Way campaign, where they put us all on billboards, you know, next to our rivals and stuff in different towns. But no, it's a college thing, just because of the sponsorship.
Have you ever thought, or would it be way too much work and not feasible to double dip about doing the college thing and the pro thing at the same time?
That's too much work.
Yeah. I mean, how many days a week, or how many days a year, I guess, should I say? How many days are you actually working?
I still average over 350 appearances a year.
Appearances. Now, it's multiples in a day, obviously.
Sure. There's days where you do three or four. And yeah, there's days like today where I'm doing this, and then I have a lunch meeting, and then I'm probably going to be
word at appearance, Tony.
And I'm probably going to be at a local course here. We're actually, me and my buddies texting right now, trying to find which ones are open on Monday. To go play this afternoon. So yeah, there's days where I'll do that. But then, you know, the game weeks, it's preparing for games and doing appearances all over the place.
How does it work? How many appearances are you doing on behalf of the team? How much are you an independent contractor?
No, it's all through the team. Obviously I book all the stuff, but I got a little desk over there through the walls here. Little cubicle, and kind of a big deal. Pretty important.
Gopherland.
Yeah.
Right in the middle.
but I book all the stuff. But all of it's through the team, whether it's, you know, ticketing stuff, sponsorship stuff, foundation, and then obviously there's outside birthday parties and stuff like that, but it's all through the team.
All right, we got a bunch of phone calls here. Let's get a few more. Curtis, you're on with Curtis. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
What up?
Curtis, you are one of the guys that kept us fired up in the stadium and during some bleak seasons, so I appreciate you.
Thanks.
The one that I remember was the BMX backflip that you pulled in full suit. I'm telling my daughters, we're up there, and I'm just like, that's impossible. You're not going to be able to pull off a backflip on a bicycle. And it was a night game, I believe.
Yeah, it was a night game. Just close your eyes, pedal real hard, and pull.
What do you do? You watch X Games, and you're like, all right, what can we do with that? Can we get a half pipe
that
in here?
That was a group called Hell on Wheels, and they had come a couple years in a row. And the year before, they had come and did a halftime thing where I was the final jump, and I rode a little kid's Walmart bike at the ramp. And the bit was that I was going to hit the ramp real hard, fly over it, and just totally wipe out, like a bad crash.
Right.
Slide down the landing ramp and just be all messed up. And then the paramedics came running on the field. The other, you know, BMX guys came over, saw me, and did the panicked, like, get over here. And the paramedics rolled the gurney onto the field, came up, picked the bike up, put it on the gurney, and everybody ran off with the bike that it was, you know, and I just laid there with my legs, you know, all jacked up. But what was funny about that was our game day producer at the time didn't know I was doing that bit, hadn't cleared that one, and so she's panicking, thinking that I'm hurt.
Yeah.
Thinking that I'm really hurt because I fell and, like, kind of took the leg and went sideways with it. But yeah, that was – so then the next year they were like, we got to outdo that one, and I wanted to set myself on fire, but Wayne said no. This is before I actually got set on fire. So I manifested.
You found
it.
A way to do it anyway. That's right.
But I wanted to set myself on fire and jump over the ramp and then get put out, but they said no. And so the backflip came about, and the guys were like, you could do it. I'm like, I've never done it on a bike, you know.
Without the costume.
I've never – yeah. Yeah. I can jump over the thing, whatever, but – they said, yeah. So they worked with me beforehand, and I didn't try it in warm up at all because I just didn't want to. If I get screwed up,
you
in warm up.
You never even tried it until you actually did it. That to me is insane. I wouldn't even, Tony. You see those foam pits?
I know.
Right, that they practice for however long months to do that kind of thing. That's nuts.
The suit. It's funny over the years, and I've said it, I've joked about it, but there is a Clark Kent Superman type feel when
you put it
weird.
On. Right.
There's things that I've done in costume that afterwards, when I look at and I say, would I go try that right now in this? And I wouldn't. The hockey games, I used to go over there and I would walk on top of the boards, on top of the plastic,
right.
The dashboards, and walk down those. And I look at those and I was like, I'd never do that out of costume, but you put the suit on and something makes you feel like you can just do anything.
How much padding is actually in that thing?
I mean, there's a little bit, there's some hoops and stuff, but.
But you're risking getting hurt when you, you know, if
oh,
that
sure.
backflip doesn't pull off.
I mean, the thing I thought is the worst that's going to happen is I land short and just hit hard.
See, I would think the worst that happens is you land on your neck and you
right.
maybe snap it, Tony. I would think that might be the worst that would happen. Yours considerably lower on the rung of
yeah,
danger.
Yeah, worst that was going to happen is I could get a little jacked up if I land short or don't land it. And it wasn't a smooth landing. It came around, landed, and
you landed it.
Let go of the bike.
All right, let's get Mary up here. Mary, you're on with Jackson DeVille. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I wanted to thank you for doing MS stuff with the other, Seahawks mascot.
Blitz, yep.
And also, just thanks for always supporting MS. As a JAG fan with MS and those of us who have it in our families, I was wondering if we couldn't get something going locally here, too. I have this wonderful idea where you could, instead of a dunking booth, that you could be into a dunked into a kitty litter box, like a giant kitty litter box. It would be fake, of course. So.
Okay. Yeah,
what the heck?
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary.
Email
people
me.
Who have good ideas,
yeah.
How do they get in touch with you?
Email me at jackson@jaguars.com, jaxson@jaguars.com for appearances or any ideas like that or events and stuff. But, yeah, Blitz from the Seahawks is a good friend of mine. His name's Ryan Asdorian. He was a former Albert the Gator, he has MS. We've done some stuff over the last 5 years since he told us, helping him raise money. This year out in Seattle, they raised about $140,000 for MS. And he's a really good friend of mine, so... we try and rally around one of our own each year and
yeah,
help them out.
There are a lot of good causes out there. My family has MS in it as well, so I appreciate that one in particular. Andrew, you're up next with the cat. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was going to say the BMX, so I had to think on the fly. I like all the professional dancing you do with some of those professional dancers. I mean, how do you learn those steps so quick?
Yeah, you know, that is, I would say, of all the things that I have to do in this job, that is one of the worst. Probably the toughest thing when I have to do those dances is I have to go to practice with the Roar several times before that game and actually be there for practice, for warm-ups, stretching, and be at Roar practice with 32 girls.
That's awful.
Several times before that game.
This is somehow coming back to Mark Long at some point in this conversation.
What's great is whenever I'm doing those, I always show up early at practice because the start of practice is, you know, stretching. So I would always show up and I'd sit in the back with like my McDonald's or whatever and just sit and eat while they're stretching and warming up and stuff. And I would tell my buddies, you know, this is back before texting. I was like, you should have been there tonight. It was a good time.
All right, Tony, we got to get to the fan feedback spotlight here,
yeah.
And we could do another hour with the cat, and we'll have to do it again very soon because
sure.
We got a stack of phone calls. We're never going to get to all of them. The Tom Butch Family Dealerships asking Jaguar fans daily what drives you today. We just want to know what your favorite cat antics are over the years, whether it's a particular moment or routine, what have you. Give us a sampling of what we've got.
Sure, a bunch of stuff. You obviously got under the skin of several division rivals over the year, including Pittsburgh, but Indianapolis got mentioned keeping himself locked in a cage during the Colts game after Polian had the mascot rules changed.
Sure.
You pulled that one off. 96. Has gotten mentioned a lot. So tell us quickly the story of how we almost never had Jacksonville.
Okay, real quick, back about the Colts. I don't want to give – now, Chris Polian works here and stuff, and he's great. Love him because he wears
– thumbs
up. Love him.
You're
love
the
him.
Man.
Love him. I just don't want to give his dad credit for changing the mascot rules. They were already in place. All he did was tattletale and get me in trouble. So he didn't change the rules. He just tattletaled. Anyway, 96. 96, Falcons game, comes down to the final game of the season. We'd won 5 in a row or so at that point, something like that. And we're about to lose the game. I am in complete disbelief. It's my first season. I thought we were going to the playoffs. I had heard about these playoff bonus things. So as a
You're not getting rich at that time?
I'm not getting rich at that time at all. 22-year-old, I'm sitting there thinking playoff bonus is going to be awesome. All we got to do is get in the playoffs, beat the Falcons. Who can't beat the Falcons? They're driving down the field at the end of the game, and it looks like we're going to lose. And Morton Anderson's coming on the field.
He's not going to miss.
And I'm like, I can't believe we're losing this game. I walk over to the goalpost, and I just start, it wasn't shtick, it was just how I was feeling. And I start banging my head against the goalpost and grabbing it with my hands because I was so frustrated that we're about to lose this game. And then I hear, off the field, I hear, hey, get away from the goalpost. And I look up, and it's the ref. And he's looking right at me.
He may have been saying something even stronger than that.
There was an expletive in it. And I look and I panic at that point. I was like, oh no. And I look up at the goalpost and it's wobbling back and forth, going left and right. And I'm panicked. So when you watch the video of that kick, what's so funny to me is normally that kick comes up, it misses right over the, you know, the left goalpost, my right, as I'm standing under it. I look up, watch it go by. And normally I would have bolted onto the field in celebration and gone nuts. But all I could do was freeze in panic because I watched the kick go by and then I stared at the ref and I was like, oh my God, he's going to throw a flag. Because the thing's still, the goalpost is still slightly shaking. And I'm like, he's going to throw a flag. I keep hearing the words, personal foul, unsportsmanlike conduct, on the mascot, re-kick. And I literally was already planning. I was like, okay, I'm going to the locker room. I'm taking the suit off. I'm grabbing what's mine and I'm going to get a ride home because the van is theirs. And I'm done.
You're done.
This was one season in the pros, and it was fun, and I'm out of here.
And we'd be having a show today about, remember that one year we had a mascot? Yeah, he cost us the playoffs.
So it didn't, no flag thrown, and I slowly then am like, okay, the game is over. We actually won that. So people still remember seeing that goalpost shake.
A lot of people brought up on the Facebook page you bungee jumping off of Wembley. Last year. Do you have something new planned in store? You don't have to, you know, spoil
we're,
it.
Got a bunch of new stuff this year. Obviously, the two new jungle gyms that Shad built for me out there. Those two new scoreboards, which is nice. Put a couple.
They power. Also can show video, I hear.
Yeah,
which
I think,
is good.
I think people are going to watch them for that too. But so I decided because they're new, beautiful boards, I'm going to jump off those every game this year, and it's going to be pretty good. We got some new little platforms there. You're gonna enjoy
some little pools out there.
Got pools in the north. I'm working on a way that we can somehow either drop into the pool. I will be in the pools this year. That's a guarantee. If there's a Vegas, you know, bet on how many, probably the bet would be over under how many games I get in one of the pools. That would be a good one. I'd say a safe bet is 3 would be the over under.